On this episode of Skeptico, psychic detective Nancy Weber recounts her amazing work in the Amy Hoffman murder case.
I also went to speak to the then captain, and I said to him, "You have an officer whose last name begins with a C." He said, "I have two of them." I said, "The hard C." He said, "Oh, you mean Costanza?" I said, "Yes." I said, "That man has ticketed the murderer. He will know who he is when you just ask him."
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on today's show, we're going to pick up on a topic that I've covered a little bit in the last few episodes, but I really need to nail down. And that's this challenge between hardcore skeptic and editor of the Skeptical Inquirer magazine, Ben Radford, and myself regarding psychic detective work. Now, if you recall, back in August, Ben came on the show. We talked about psychic detective work, and I said, "Gee, why don't you ever investigate very good cases?" And Ben said, "Why is whatever case we pick never good enough?" So we decided that I should really pick the case, and then that we should investigate it together. Let me go back and play an extended clip from that show so everyone's up to speed on where we are with this challenge. Here goes. You just kind of waded into a subject that I did want to talk about today, and this whole idea of psychic detectives, because I've read many of your articles, and you're obviously a very talented writer, and you do a good job of summing up these cases, and nothing is, you know, you're not flying off the handle in a really incendiary way, but I do feel like a lot of times you pick on cases that have failed and make the case that that somehow proves something. As I was reading that, I was going, gosh, why hasn't he looked at the best cases? And let me give you an example. Here's someone who I've actually spoken with, a psychic I've spoken with. Nancy Orlean Weber is her name, and she was on the Psychic Detective Show. So I go to her website in preparation for this interview we're doing here, because I've seen your cases where you've said some of these psychics that appear on TV, they never solve any cases and all the rest of that. You go right to her website, and you read her letters of reference from detectives, you know, detectives who've been in the New Jersey State Police for 25 years and say, "Yeah, I've worked on her with all these cases and she really helped. Yeah, I spoke with these other investigators who worked on murder cases with her. She did a really good job. She received a letter of commendation." I mean, there's like this total disconnect. Why do we really care that there's all these failures, or do we care that the phenomena does seem to happen at some times with some people to the extent that it's proven beyond a doubt to the very folks who are very skeptical to begin with when you talk about a detective on the New Jersey police? I mean, these are people who you're not easily going to go in and dupe with some tall story. Where's the investigation on the best cases?
Okay, tell you what we'll do. Why don't we do this? You find the best case you can find. Just look through all the psychics you want, figure out which one, and pick the one case that you think is airtight, and give it to me, and I'll get back to you in a couple months, and we'll see what we find.
So that was the challenge. Find the best case of psychic detective work. Now, you may recall that before we did the best case, what we're doing today, we faced off on another case that Ben had already investigated, the Charles Coppell case. I'm not going to go through that. That's all documented in the previous episodes of Skeptico. But what's useful to remember is where we came to at the end of that. What it distilled down to was Ben's criteria for analyzing a skeptical detective case. And it's not a totally inappropriate criteria. It's based on two things. One was the information that the psychic gave to the police investigator remarkable. And number two was the information useful in the investigation. And we had quite a disagreement about the Charles Coppell case that we looked at and whether the information was remarkable and whether it was useful. And I really felt like if the police felt it was useful, then it's useful and they could be the only judge of that. Ben felt very strongly that an independent skeptical investigator like himself could determine whether the information that was provided was remarkable and useful. But in the end, what became clear was that the case we were working on, and it was a case of Ben's choosing, was not the best case to analyze that. And that made it even more clear that we needed to pick this different case, this best case, if you will. And I don't know if this is the best case, but I went about finding a case that we could investigate. And I have to tell you, it wasn't hard to do. I just directly followed through with exactly what I said I was going to do in the first broadcast. And I called up Nancy Orlean Weber, who is a psychic detective who I know and I've spoken with before. And I asked her, I said, what's a good case? And here is that conversation. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks so much for joining me on this. And I think it's kind of an interesting project. I don't know how much of my email you're able to read. Were you able to kind of dig into any of that at all?
I have no idea what we're even going to discuss.
Okay, then let me kind of fill you in. What I've been doing for the last couple of years is trying to, I guess, maybe try and level the playing field a little bit in the way that skeptics treat all these topics. Here's what I'm focused on right now and the reason for my call. And I know that a lot of the work you do is in the healing work. But I think the area of psychic detectives, even though it's been so publicized on the TV, if you go into the skeptical world, and I've recently had this kind of running encounter with the editor from the Skeptical Inquirer magazine. And we've actually had a nice exchange, a pleasant, you know, cordial exchange. But he's kind of, I challenged him on his skeptical investigation of a psychic detective case. So he said, well, why don't you pick a case? You pick a case and we'll investigate it together. Nancy, I don't know if you're running into these people, but he maintains that there is not one single case in history. He denies that even that the police ever do this. And when you point out the police have said, hey, I was super skeptical, I came in, then he's, oh, well, that officer was just off his head, you know. So would you be willing to help me go through a case that we can find that's reasonably well documented, where there's law enforcement that would at least spend a few minutes confirming the information that's already been out there, and that we could kind of go head to head with this guy?
Absolutely. And in point, during the publicity for the beginning of a Biography Channel series that I was part of, they asked if I would come out to all the TV shows and do a little PR work along with the detective who I had worked with, who was now kind of a big wheel in the state police. And he got permission from his superior to go with me anywhere, speak about anything, do it any time, totally. Carte blanche. And it was the case on James Kadavich, the serial killer.
And I'm sorry, Nancy, who again was the victim and who was the perpetrator?
The victims were Deirdre O'Brien and Amy Hoffman. This was in the 1980s. The parts, and it doesn't mean I catch the people. What it means is there were two officers. One was a captain of homicide at Parsippany. The other was a detective out of Mount Olive, and they were teamed up as part of the task force. And when I was with them, several of the things that they will recall and repeat.
I just wanted to jump in here and clarify something, because Nancy's about to go into listing out the specific information that she brought to the police. And I just want to make that clear that that's what she's doing here.
That the man who did it, his first name is James, his last name is Polish, multiple syllables, beginning with a K and ending in an ish. He came up from Florida, where he had been in prison for murder. He was released inappropriately. They will be sued, the state. He lived in an area of Morristown called The Hollow. His brother owned or worked at a gas station where he took a car out of there. He had use of several cars, but he had a car he was driving that will have forensic evidence of blood or hair. And everyone said, absolutely impossible, also. He grew up here. He came from a very insane family, particularly mother. He was about 5'10", very narrow, angular features, dark hair that, strangely enough, I kept seeing the hair being pulled off like a wig with a V. The other part was that there were strange tire tracks that would be very unique and pertinent to catching him. Okay. No one caught him. One night, I sat with my group meditating, and I told them, I have never spoken to you about my work with the police. This is in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
I would not tell them cases. I said, this case I must talk about because I'm furious.
Mm-hmm.
I also went with these two men to the Mendham Township to speak to the then captain, who's now retired. And I said to him, you have an officer whose last name begins with a C. He said, I have two of them. I said, the hard C. He said, oh, you mean Costanza? I said, yes. Costanza is now the chief of police there.
Uh-huh.
Okay, just so you know, Tommy Costanza, who was in the movie with us. And I said, that man has ticketed the murderer. He will know who he is when you just ask him.
Wow.
Okay? It turns out, I sat with my class. I went through the entire case with them because I was disgusted. I thought, I don't get it. I know we know who did it.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it. I go and reveal everything to my five students that night instead of the usual number, and I trusted them. I knew them for years. And I said, you cannot tell anybody about this, but hold my hands, and we're going to ask God that if it's within the spiritual path of everyone, victims, their families, James K. Itch, to bring him in and stop him from causing pain to anybody else, and for him to have his own pain the way he's given it to women, because he would knife them, abduct them, knife in the back, torture them, rape them, murder them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was more to the story about what I saw that was confirmed by Bill and Jimmy Moore. I knew the newspapers reported Amy's body was found clothed, and they couldn't tell a determined death, and I went, bold.
Mm-hmm.
She was raped, murdered, tortured,
mm-hmm.
no clothes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was found.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when we did this prayer, we finished, we go to sleep. The next day, Jimmy Moore calls me. He goes, Nancy, what did you do? I said, what do you mean? What did I do? He said, what did you do? I said, well, last night I had a class. I felt guilty. I said, I had a class last night, and I did talk to them about it. And we said a prayer, da-da-da-da. They go over it, and he said, a man named James Kadadich. And when he said that, I went, oh, my God, he's caught. He said, well, no, he caught himself. He claims that somebody with long brown hair ran him off the road the way he ran others, knifed him in the back, and he called in to the police, and they brought an ambulance, and they took a look at his car, and it answered the description, and he's been booked. And now forensics finds out a few weeks later, one hair in the trunk or wherever it was of Deirdre's and one drop of blood left that was Amy's. He was of Polish descent. He grew up in Morristown, went to Morristown High, lived in the Hollow. His brother owned a gas station. That's where he got his car. The parole board in Florida let him out after he was put in for murder and then murdered his roommate there.
Mm.
Right. And they let him out. And the state of Florida was sued.
That's an extraordinary story. It's off the charts extraordinary. Now, what's our best way to nail this down? Who should I speak to in law enforcement, and what other documentation do you have?
You have the TV shows in which Jimmy Moore and Bill Hughes both speak.
Right.
They are on camera doing it, and they have Jimmy's retired, but he was captain of homicide. I'll give you Jimmy's number. Now, Bill Hughes is not easy to get a hold of because he also does terrorist training.
Uh-huh.
He's a neat guy. And when he read a newspaper article that was the reporter story before the Bio Channel came out was saying that it was bull, it's that Billy got on the phone and no one had ever heard Billy get angry. No one. His wife, I mean, she was in shock. We were all together. He was fuming and cursing. I have never heard him curse. I know him since 1980. Now, everybody's heard me curse, but nobody's ever heard him curse. But 1980, and we heard him all day long, steaming mad at this reporter who twisted things. Ugh. Anyhow, that's the story. Okay? I got to run.
That's a great story. Thanks a bunch.
Okay. Bye, Al.
Bye-bye. Okay, so that was my conversation with psychic detective Nancy Weber. And I'm going to have a little bit more to say about this case in just a minute, but I want to kind of put these pieces together in chronological order. So the next thing that I did was to call Ben Radford from the Skeptical Inquirer again and close the loop that I had selected my case and give him the information on that case so he could start investigating it at the same time that I was. And here's a clip from that conversation. Your points on the case were pretty straightforward. You just said, hey, you wanted to make sure that this was the case I wanted to hang my hat on, and that's the Amy Hoffman murder case where Nancy Orlene Weber was the psychic detective.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's fine with me. I'll hang my hat on it. Will you hang your hat on it?
Sure, absolutely. And let me just say at the outset, before you sent me that name in that case, I'd never heard of it before. In fact, I know almost nothing other than what you said. So I look forward in the coming weeks and as time allows, looking into it. I'll be very interested to sort of see how it all hashes out, and if this really is a good example of psychic detectives, then great.
Okay, great. And if it's not, I'll be at your mercy.
Okay, well, I'm sure we can come up with something.
Okay, so we now have a lot of the pieces in place for us to begin our investigation. We've selected a case. I've spoken with the psychic detective, and she's made it clear what information she provided the investigators. But let me take another step in framing up this case and how we're going to investigate it, because I think this is another area where confusion can come in terms of how skeptics can look at things and how believers can look at things. And we need to kind of really frame up exactly what we're trying to measure. And in this case, I want to go by Ben's criteria. Is the information remarkable and was it useful to investigators? But I want to trim out some of the other information that came through, not because I don't think it's valid, but because I think it's harder to validate and really nail down. And that's the part of how he's eventually captured and how Nancy's prayers led this guy to turn himself in. I think the fact that he turns himself in is indisputable, but I think there's other elements of that that may become a gray area and will just get us off track. So for this case, I want to focus on and verify whether Nancy provided investigators the first name of the perpetrator when that name was not known to them, whether she provided information regarding the last name, that it had three syllables, was of Polish descent, ended in an itch sound. I want to verify whether that was provided to investigators prior to them knowing that. I want to verify whether she provided information about him being a convicted murderer who had left Florida and returned to New Jersey, and that he was originally from New Jersey and that he lived in an area of the Hollow. And I think I can stop right there. I think any reasonable person would acknowledge that if the police had no prior information about the perpetrator and that they were provided that information, that would be incredibly useful to any investigation. I mean, that's just, I hope that doesn't become a point of even argument, because it would just be bizarre. Of course, providing the first and last name of the perpetrator when that is unknown would be useful. And I think there's little argument that if she provided that information when it was not known, that would be truly remarkable. We have no way of explaining how she could provide all that information when it was not known to anyone. So that's the course I'm going to take in pursuing this. And along the way, I'm also going to investigate some of the other claims that she makes, because they are truly, truly just off the charts. They have that wow element to them that I think compels us all to kind of look in there. But in terms of this investigation, let me emphasize this. These are the criteria we should look at. Whether she provided information about the name, that he had fled from Florida and he was an escaped murderer, and that he was from New Jersey and that he lived in the Hollow. That's what I'm going off of in terms of this investigation. And you can be sure that you'll hear much more on this case. I'm going to have interviews with the police detectives involved. I'm going to have snippets from the New York Times and any other publications I can lay my hands on. I'm also going to try and get some information from the TV show that was produced on this, which I also want to make that clear. There's tons of information on this. All the key players are still alive. These investigators don't forget double homicide, serial killing cases. It's been well publicized. Everyone has a good recollection on all these things. That shouldn't be a problem. So much more to come on this, on the Amy Hoffman murder case. You can Google it yourself. I'd really, really welcome any thoughts or ideas that anyone has at this point from what you've heard in the investigation, whether you think this is a valid case to investigate, and whether you think the criteria that I've established for determining whether or not she provided useful and remarkable information is valid. Let me know. Drop me an email. You can find my email address, of course, as always, at skeptiko.com. That's S-K-E-P-T-I-K-O. You'll also find some show notes on this episode, as well as links to all our previous episodes and a link to our forum where you can get involved in a discussion on this. So that's going to do it for today. Take care. Bye for now.